This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Juan Williams. A new chapter was written in the history of golf and of sports yesterday, and it was broadcast by ABC.
He's won them all. The Grand Slam. The youngest man in the history of the game.
For all that hoopla, Tiger Woods' father said matter-of-factly in a recent interview with Sports Illustrated that his son's greatest contributions would not be as a golfer. Earl Woods told columnist Rick Riley to recall the impact that Muhammad Ali had on the world. Earl Woods rightly said that Ali's greatness went beyond boxing and went beyond America, even though in Earl Woods' opinion, Ali lacked education and good communication skills. Imagine, Earl Woods asked, what Tiger Woods, the world's greatest golfer, will do with a Stanford education, with great communication skills, and also an acute sense of responsibility and political purpose. Yesterday, Tiger Woods won the British Open with such an amazing performance that he's now approaching his father's majestic vision. His victory was so dominant that he is transcending the sport. Golfers are not quick to defer to younger players, but already older golfers speak of Woods as the chosen one, and the gold standard now for all golfers. As a golfer, he has now won four major championships, at age 24. No one has done that before. And Woods did not just win the British Open, he won with a 269, breaking a 129-year-old record by hitting the lowest score ever at the legendary Old Course at St. Andrews. And he recorded the largest margin of victory in the event since 1913. Today in USA Today, there are two full-page ads featuring Tiger Woods. His earnings from golf and endorsement deals already make him worth hundreds of millions of dollars. And he is not under the control of some shady agent or promoter. Even his father and mother, both of whom are very close to him, do not claim to be in control of him. He has the intelligence to direct his own affairs, including how his money will be used. His father has suggested that Tiger Woods will make a mark on world history through a well-funded foundation, but the 24-year-old Woods is more than his money. He has a name that is recognizable around the world and the ability to open doors at every level of society. So far, he has not raised his voice about political or cultural issues other than to say that he does not consider himself black. He says he's a mixture of his mother's Asian roots with his father's family history of blacks, American Indians, and whites. And his friends are people of all races. Is Tiger Woods the second coming of Muhammad Ali? What is the difference between Ali in the 1960s and Woods in this year 2000? And is it possible that he could have a political agenda that he's waiting to unveil? My guest this hour is John Feinstein, commentator on NPR's Morning Edition. He's the author of many books, most recently The Majors. He's currently working on a book about college basketball. Thanks for joining us, John.
Juan, it's worth all the effort it took to get here just to hear your voice.
You're my friend.
I hope so. We've only known each other for 25 years.
There you go. If you want to join the conversation, our number here is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Please include your name and where you're writing from. John Feinstein, you've written extensively about golf. Was yesterday's performance at a level that you'd never seen before?
Well, not since last month at the U.S. Open, when Tiger won by 15 shots at Pebble Beach. The really scary thing, if you're the rest of the golf world, is that these kinds of performances are getting to be the norm for Tiger. Ernie Els is a truly great player, and he said himself yesterday, after finishing second for the second straight time in a major behind Tiger, that if he played the best golf he possibly could, he couldn't beat Tiger. And that's the ultimate tribute, when the best players in the world say that when you're on your game, you can't be beaten.
Well, Nick Faldo said that now Tiger Woods is simply in a different league. It's unusual to hear the older guys speak so with such awe of a younger player.
Well, but you know what, Juan? This goes back a ways with Tiger. As far back as 1996, Jack Nicklaus played a practice round with him at Augusta at the Masters and came in afterwards and said, "This kid will win more major titles than Arnold being Arnold Palmer, and me combined, or more Masters, excuse me." Well, Jack won six and Arnold won four, and as weak as my math skills are, I know that equals 10. So he was predicting that Tiger Woods, now this is a 20-year-old amateur he's talking about at the time, would win 11 Masters. No one, Nicklaus has won, the sixth Nicklaus won is by far the record. And people, including myself, kind of said, oh, come on, Jack, turn off the hyperbole enough. We know the kid's a real talent, but let's not get carried away. Well, guess what? Now people are, like me, are starting to say maybe Jack wasn't crazy 4 years ago.
Well, the thing that stands out to me is that in the history of golf, there have only been five players, now including Woods, so four others, who've won Grand Slams. That's Gene Sarazen, Ben Hogan, Gary Player, and Nicklaus.
Very good. You've done your homework.
Well, I think so. I wanted to check with you. But nonetheless, that means that he is already, at age 24, in the most elite group of golfers ever.
That's right. That's exactly right. And think, here are some of the names of guys who didn't win a career Grand Slam. Arnold Palmer, Sam Snead, Byron Nelson, Tom Watson. I mean, that's a pretty good list right there.
That's
and he surpassed them yesterday by winning a career Grand Slam at the age of 24. Nicklaus did it at 26. He was the youngest one prior to Tiger to achieve that. And he just keeps doing this. I mean, I said after the U.S. Open to Bob Edwards that the biggest problem all of us who write and talk about Tiger are having is we're running out of adjectives to describe him, because you can only say extraordinary, amazing, unbelievable so many times before you start to become repetitive and boring, which, as you know, I'm very good at. But I really think that in your intro there, very well written, by the way, when you brought up his potential for what he may do beyond golf, to me that becomes a more and more significant question as he moves further and further into his career. Because Tiger has the ability, because of his visibility and because of his intelligence, to be Arthur Ashe, to be Muhammad Ali in terms of being an agent for social change. Now, Michael Jordan has that same ability and has chosen not to use it, at least thus far. So my big question as we go further into time, and I think 24 is too early to ask him to do this. Right now, it's perfectly fair for him to focus on being a golfer. But there's going to come a point in his life, I hope, where he's going to want to be more than a golfer and more than a moneymaker and not take the path that Jordan has taken so far, where all he's been is a basketball player and a moneymaker.
Well, what kind of human being is Tiger Woods? What do you hear from other golfers? What do you hear when you talk to his parents or his friends? What comes back to you as a reporter?
Well, I've had the chance to spend some time with Tiger and with other players. His father and I don't speak because I've been very critical of his father and was especially critical of him early in Tiger's career, because I saw him and still see him as sort of your typical pushy tennis/golf parent. The big difference between Earl and the others being that Earl won the lottery and got the kid with all the talent. But Tiger is, I've said this before, probably as bright, if not the brightest athlete I've ever met.
Wow.
And one of the brightest people I've ever met. The first time I really had a chance to sit down and talk with him was in San Diego a couple of years ago over dinner. And you can tell after 30 seconds that he's a smart kid if you just listen to him. But when you spend time with him and kind of get in depth and argue with him, as I was doing on a number of topics, you sort of step back and say, wait a minute, this kid's 21 years old, which is 22 at the time, and he's coming right back at me, it just kind of knocked me backwards a little bit, because I'm not used to athletes who can actually make cogent arguments on topics other than hitting the ball left to right or making a jump shot. So that's why I think he has this great potential, and in that way, he reminds me of Arthur Ashe, because Arthur Ashe was, again, one of the two or three brightest people I ever met in sports and one of the brightest people I ever met, period, and Arthur used all of that to be one of the very few athletes who achieved more after his career than he achieved during his career.
So do you have any sense of what his politics are like? What are Tiger Woods' politics?
Tiger Woods is a registered independent. And I have a feeling that given where he came from and what his influences are now, he's probably a lot like you, Juan. He's more right than left.
Was that right? Well, thanks, John.
He's not as conservative as most of the golfers on tour who are to the right of your close friend Pat Buchanan in most cases.
Right, right.
But I think he's probably fairly much down the middle, but a little bit probably to the right of center overall.
Well, what do you know about the politics of his father and his mother? You said where he comes from. Where he comes from is California.
He comes from Compton, California. Excuse me, not Compton. I'm getting him mixed up with the Williams sisters. He's from outside of Los Angeles and grew up essentially middle class. His father, as I'm sure you know, is an ex-Marine. There were rumors, and I never confirmed, but that after Tiger won the Masters in 1997, he was invited by President Clinton to participate in a ceremony in New York honoring the 50th anniversary of Jackie Robinson's debut in the major leagues. He turned the invitation down, and that was one of the things I was very critical of him for doing. And since then, he has apologized to Rachel Robinson for not attending that ceremony, which to me is a sign of Tiger's maturity, because
right.
very few athletes at his level ever admit to doing anything wrong. They live in the land of never wrong.
Much less apologize.
Yes, and he went out of his way to phone her to say, you know what, looking back on it, I should have been there. But he defended that position for a long time, not surprisingly. But at the time, one of the stories going around, which has never been confirmed, but was that Earl Woods, the ex-Marine who fought in Vietnam, and in fact that's where Tiger's nickname comes from, because one of the people Earl Woods fought with in Vietnam was someone named Tiger Fong, and that's why when his son Eldrick was born, he nicknamed him Tiger after his buddy. But that Earl had made the comment that he had no desire to see his son participate in a ceremony with the quote-unquote draft dodger, Bill Clinton. Whether that's true or not, no one knows, but, you know, Earl is a very proud ex-Marine. There's no question about that.
Well, what about the mother?
The mother's completely different. As you mentioned, she's Asian. She's Buddhist. She takes Tiger at least once a year to the Buddhist church. Tiger himself says that much of his calm under fire comes from Kultida. His parents are separated and have been for several years. But Kultida Woods is much quieter than Earl. I mean, Earl has opinions on everything.
Right.
And Kultida is the calm one in the family. And I think a lot of Tiger's inner strength, which you have to be a champion in any sport, comes from his mother. But what her politics are, other than, again, her Buddhist background, I haven't the faintest notion because I've never heard her talk about them.
Well, the one time that he stirred a little bit of controversy was when he said he was not black. And then there was all this commotion, people saying, well, what does he consider himself? And that if he wasn't a famous golfer, if he was just on the street, every white American would say, there goes that black kid. They wouldn't say, there goes that great golfer.
Well, I think, again, Tiger is not someone who wants to sort of swim with the tide. And so much was made of his victory at the Masters, deservedly so, given, you know, just in a golf sense, 21-year-old kid playing in his first major championship wins by 12 shots, but also in a social sense, because this was the, you know, Augusta National was known for years for being so lily white. It's still an all-male club. It now does have 3 African-American members, and which puts it ahead of a number of country clubs, as you well know.
Oh, right.
But he, at the time, did not want to simply be labeled the black kid who won the Masters. And I think that's why he came up with this phrase, Cablinasian.
Well, he's never going to be labeled just the black kid again after the performance this weekend. We're going to take a short break right now. You're listening to Talk of the Nation. I'm Juan Williams. When we return, we'll continue talking about Tiger Woods and his place in golf and potentially world history, and we'll begin taking your calls at 800-989-8255. If you'd like to comment on the program, please do send us an email to totn@npr.org. Please include your name and where you're writing from. At 21 minutes past the hour, it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Welcome back to Talk of the Nation. I'm Juan Williams. Today we're talking about Tiger Woods' record-setting victory at the British Open this past weekend. My guest is John Feinstein. He's a friend and also commentator on NPR's Morning Edition. He's also a columnist for Golf Magazine and the author of many books. His most recent is The Majors. If you want to join the conversation, our number here is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. John, I hope you're feeling well.
I feel fine, Juan. I just get so nervous talking to you.
I know. This happens to many people.
I'm not used to being around, yes. You know,
Well, let me ask
Bob
you.
Bob Edwards is one thing. You're completely another.
Well, thank goodness.
You're right about that.
John, in the opening, I said that Tiger Woods has the potential to have the impact of a Muhammad Ali in the 1960s. Of course, we're talking about a different time frame. Is that stretching it a bit?
No, I don't think it's stretching it a bit, although I do think, again, I didn't know Ali well. I met him just a couple of times. And a lot of what Ali became was controlled at the time, you remember, and I'm sure you've read, by the Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
And I, as you pointed out in your opening, Tiger ultimately isn't going to be controlled by anybody. He was controlled to a certain extent when he first turned pro by his father and also by his agent at IMG, a guy named Hughes Norton. Very interestingly, it took Tiger about 18 months to figure out that he didn't need Hughes Norton, who made more enemies than friends for Tiger with the way he handled things. And he's pulled away from his father. Not that they're not still close. I mean in terms of making his decisions, because he's older, he's more mature now. His father's had some health problems that have kept him from traveling that much. And as a result, Tiger now has complete control over his world. He got rid of his caddy because he thought his caddy was basking in the publicity too much. As I said, he got rid of his agent. Now he has a caddy who doesn't speak to the media. Imagine that, a caddy not speaking to the media.
Right.
Most caddies will come to your house to talk to you. His girlfriend does not speak to the media. And his agent does speak to the media and does it a lot less arrogantly than Hughes Norton did it. So he's completely reshaped his little world in a couple of years. And while doing that, he's also reshaped his golf swing. As good as his golf swing was when he first came on tour, he didn't feel it was good enough. And he changed it completely in 1998. And I did a piece in the Post op-ed section a couple weeks ago. I can't remember when now. But I mentioned that Tiger Woods reshaping his golf swing in 1997 was a little bit like Beethoven sitting back from the Ode to Joy and saying, well, that's okay, but let's work on it some more. And yet he did, and he made it even better, and that's why he's so dominant right now.
Let's go to Leon in Washington, D.C. Leon, you're on Talk of the Nation.
Good afternoon. How you doing, Junior?
Good afternoon.
Hey, you know, you must judge people within the context of the time and history in which they exist. The champ risked and sacrificed all that he had acquired materially and socially.
You're talking about Ali.
Yes. To stand against the war in Vietnam and to stand for his people, Allah, through the Nation of Islam. What made and makes the champ unique is his uncompromising adherence to his principles and to his people. And it takes a very special person slash personality to withstand all that he withstood and continues to. And that's what endeared him and continues to endear the champ to the world. History has not placed Tiger in that position, nor has he chosen to place himself there. And I think to ask that question, to make that comparison, is A, insulting to the champ, and B, stretching things so beyond the realm of reality at this point that the question or the discussion is really silly.
No, I don't think so. In fact, I think that Tiger Woods, given his performance, his startling and stunning performance, is now in a position where he could have an impact on the society in much the way, if he chooses to adhere to some principle or reveal some agenda, in much the way Ali did.
Yeah, but if pigs could fly, we'd all need to wear helmets.
No, but I mean, Leon, let me jump in here, because everything you said is true until the very end, because it is not an insult to compare Tiger Woods to Muhammad Ali. Certainly Ali, no, wait a sec. We're talking about potential. Absolutely, Tiger hasn't done anything social.
Correct.
Yet. He's done zero. But I think the question Juan was raising was, given his ability as an athlete and given the visibility that he has as a result of this and given the fact that he is as smart as he is, does he have the potential to do things the way Ali did things through his fighting against the Vietnam War and taking the stands that he did? And I say the answer is yes, he has the potential, but whether he will realize it is something we won't know the answer to for years.
But it's just like Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan didn't do anything with it.
If you look at the at least at this point, the one opportunity that he had to do that, and that was embracing the fact that he is an African American. He ran from that. And yeah, I don't condemn him for that. I merely state it as fact.
Leon, let me just fill you in on a couple things. He's not running from being an African American. I think one point he wanted to make was he wanted his mother to be part of this story. And that was one of the reasons why he brought her background into it, because his father is the one who's always been front and center and taken all the bows and written all the books about how he created Tiger Woods.
That's understood.
So I think that was part of it. The other thing is he did have an opportunity recently to make a political statement during the strike that's going on now in Hollywood involving those who do commercials. And unlike Shaquille O'Neal, who went across the picket line and taped commercials during the course of this strike, Tiger Woods has refused to tape any commercials for Nike during the course of the strike. And I think, to me, that's an encouraging sign that he does have some, at least that much social conscience at a young age.
All right, let's go to Greg in Salt Lake City.
Hi there.
Greg, you're on Talk of the Nation.
I guess I get concerned when I hear people talk about Tiger's political agenda. My point is just because the show might be coming out of D.C. or the East Coast, Tiger can do what he wants, and it doesn't have to have anything to do with an agenda per se as far as politics. My point is he'll do what he wants when he wants and whatever is his heart, and my beef with the way the discussion going is, why not have Tiger answer the question? What would he like to see? And the discussion when it goes along the lines of having a press sports reporter come on, and you know, now I understand why Tiger doesn't really want to have his caddy talking to the press because they're not on his team.
I'm missing your point there about a sports reporter talking about Tiger.
Oh yeah, I mean, I don't see the two mixing as far as what his political agenda is.
No, I think
the guy that was on before.
Well, here's the point. I don't think Tiger has a political agenda at the moment, nor does he need to have one, because he is right now a 24-year-old golfer. But I think what we're talking about here is there are certain people in sports, as in entertainment, who have the opportunity to make certain points socially if they so choose. And we don't know. Tiger, you know, when he's been asked political questions, has basically said, I don't want to talk about politics. And he's entitled to not talk about politics. But at some point when he's 40, 50, the question becomes, given who he is and who he is going to be, is does he take on a political agenda, to use your terms? And I'm just saying, we don't know. Just as Juan just mentioned with Michael Jordan, thus far, the answer is that Michael Jordan's only agenda is to make money for Michael Jordan, which he's perfectly entitled to do.
Okay, first point is, it wasn't my term, political agenda. It came off the radio. Okay,
one of the callers used it. I don't know.
Go ahead.
It was one. Anyway, my point is Tiger can write his own ticket, and I think people are uncomfortable because they don't have an idea of what's going on because they don't have his handlers around him, like what goes on inside of D.C. on the politics. And that's why I think people are uncomfortable, because you've got, as everyone says, a Stanford-educated person who is independent thinker, can do what he wants, and now people are talking, like you just said, what's going to go on 40 years down the road or whatever. Just ask Tiger what he wants and look at what he's doing and quit trying to read into it. That's all I'm trying to say.
Well, wait a second. Let me respond to you, Greg, here. There is tremendous potential here for someone who is world famous now, acknowledged by his peers as having supernatural ability as a golfer, and someone with great funding, great finances. So it seems to me that if he wanted to have some impact on our culture, on our politics, whatever arena you want to point to, Tiger Woods could do it. That's what we're saying.
But my point is he's already doing it by not having a direct comment on politics. If you simply look at his actions of not going to visit with the president, who's got the email problem, not saying certain things, if you look specifically at his actions, you'll realize what he's all about. He is about standing up for principles and standing up for himself, rather than cloaking himself saying, oh, well, I'm some poor disadvantaged person. I mean, no, that's Tiger Woods, Stanford educated guy. He can use his own brain. He can do what he wants. He can do whatever he wants.
Well,
and
including,
don't like him.
Well, but I'm saying doing whatever he wants may include, for example, standing up on certain controversial political issues. It may mean using the foundation, as Earl Woods has said, to accomplish some end. We don't know. But what we have before us is clearly a phenomenal personality, intellect, and the ability for a tremendous athlete to make a stand.
Right. So go t- talk to Tiger and watch what he does. He can do anything he wants, just like anybody in this country can do whatever they want if they set their heart to. And that's what Tiger Woods is all about, is if you do your action that is consistent with your values, you can do anything. And that's
no, but see, Greg, there's where I think you're mistaken, because Tiger Woods can do more than most people because of all the things Juan just mentioned. He has the ability to do more with his potential because of his visibility, because of his money, because of who he is as a golfer, if he so chooses.
John, we have an email here from Tom Wiggins in Palo Alto, and he says, as a Stanford graduate, class of 97, with honors in Phi Beta Kappa, I get annoyed when people refer to Tiger as having a Stanford education.
He's a dropout. 2 years.
He does not have a Stanford education. I admire Tiger and like what he has to say, but he will not have a Stanford education until he returns to the farm for a few more years. Is that right?
Well, he left after his sophomore year. That's absolutely correct, and as many athletes do, and certainly in basketball it happens. And most golfers, by the way, many golfers, let me rephrase that, went to college and didn't graduate. The most famous alumnus in the history of Wake Forest University is Arnold Palmer, who didn't graduate. The most famous alumnus in the history of Ohio State is Jack Nicklaus, who didn't graduate. Golfers go off to make their fortune, usually before they get a degree. If Tiger wants his degree, he can go back and get it. I think he could afford to pay the tuition at this point anyway.
Now, here's another question. I'd like to know why, says Rita Swan of Sioux City, Iowa, Earl Woods was not at St. Andrews yesterday to watch Tiger win.
Health. Earl has had serious health problems, really, over the last 3 years. He got very sick in Tulsa in 1996, had to be taken to the hospital in the middle of the night. He's had open heart surgery. Traveling for him is difficult now. And so he, generally speaking, stays home from the tournaments, which, frankly, I think is good for Tiger because it allows him kind of a wider berth to do his own thing without Earl there looking over his shoulder.
All right, let's go to Stan in San Francisco. Stan, you're on Talk of the Nation.
Juan?
Hi.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
I was impressed with Tiger Woods' victory earlier this month or last month. Really impressed, although I'm really not a golfing fan. Until, Juan, it occurred to me that symbol on his hat was Nike, one of the sweatshirt companies like Gap, Old Navy, and Banana Republic. So I immediately lost respect for him. And by way of analogy, the same thing happened to me with Michael Jackson. I thought his Thriller
Michael
album...
Michael Jordan.
No, he said...
being genius.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, he meant Michael Jackson.
I apologize. I thought you were talking about Michael Jordan, who's also a Nike
No, no, Michael Jackson. His Thriller album was a genius, artistry, until he was exposed as a pedophile, and I lost respect for him. So every time I hear that music, I just turn it off. I can't take it anymore.
Well, I think that's an unsubstantiated charge, but Stan, thanks for your call. Let me tell everyone who's tuned into this conversation about Tiger Woods' phenomenal performance this weekend that they're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. John, what about Tiger Woods' association with Nike? Is it possible that Nike will push him in a certain direction? For example, he did not speak up about the sweatshops issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question because obviously this has come up with Michael Jordan too. And Jordan at least did speak up a couple of times to say he was concerned about it. It didn't cause him to disassociate with Nike and the millions of dollars they pay him. And I think that is another public relations issue that Tiger Woods has to deal with. I think he would tell you that he's been told by Nike people that they're working on the problem, that it's going to get better, that it's not as bad as has been portrayed in some places. But frankly, that's a little bit of a cop-out, you know, because we all know, based on what we've read, that there is a problem with Nike and their working conditions in the Far East. And it is something probably that Tiger should step back and take a look at. Because, you know, it's interesting, Juan, if he decided tomorrow that he didn't want to be associated with Nike anymore and walked away from the $40 million that they're supposed to pay him over the next couple of years, he'd still be one of the wealthiest athletes in the world. So it's not as if he absolutely has to keep this contract intact because he needs the money.
No. By the way, John, I've been told that Earl Woods was not in the Marines, but was with Army Special Forces. So a correction for all those of you who are listening.
That surprises me. I thought he was a Marine.
All right, let's go to Raj.
It wouldn't be my first mistake, though, would it?
Well, not for me either. Raj in Los Angeles, you're on Talk of the Nation.
I've got a couple of comments to make. Tiger Woods is not like, you know, any other, you know, like he has an Asian mindset since his mother is Thai. So he's not like bragging. See, Muhammad Ali was always bragging, you know, I'm the greatest and all. You'll never hear that from Tiger Woods. See, his mindset is different. And also, you cannot compare him with other people. He's only 24. It's a young age. How many, even in other fields, people at the age of 24 have gotten into politics and, you know, all that, you know, things to do, you know, like action, government action or anything like that. So that's why, you know, you have to see him at the age of like 30 or something. And then what Michael Jordan did, nothing. He's 36 and all he did was for the Nike doing all that, just talk. He has to do something active, you know, something real action is required.
Hey, Raj, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
What's the reaction to Tiger Woods in Asia? Do they view him as one of their own?
Yeah, they certainly do, but they won't publicize it. Like African Americans always talk about that he's disowning us, he's not talking about us and all that. They won't do such things. You know, they will keep it in their own, and they know he's Asian, and that's all. But then, you know, the other communities here I've seen, like you know, like especially other, like even Hispanic, if you come from that community and then you have to brag that you are coming from that community, otherwise something's wrong with you. We don't do that, you know. We know he's an Asian. He's half Asian. You know, it's not like he's half Asian and half African American. And so it's a quiet way. He's more quiet that way. He doesn't, you know, he's more modest and things like those are Asian qualities you'll see. And he has those.
All right. Thanks for your call, Raj. Let's go to Michael in San Antonio. Michael, you're on Talk of the Nation.
Hello. I wanted to ask you all, at what age do the famous and great golfers usually have their best seasons? What do we have to look for with Tiger? I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Michael.
That's a good question, Michael. Most golfers peak in their 30s, and that's what's a little bit scary about realizing what Tiger's already accomplished. Now, Jack Nicklaus was great in his 20s. He closed out winning a career Grand Slam by the time he was 26. But Arnold Palmer didn't win his first Masters until he was 28. And won most of his major championships in his early 30s. A lot of golfers at the top levels don't really begin to peak until they're in their 30s, but when you get the unique talents like Tiger and Jack Nicklaus, they tend to become stars earlier.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation. I'm Juan Williams. John Feinstein and I are going to take a short break right now. When we return, we'll continue talking about Tiger Woods and his terrific golf skills, and we'll take more of your calls at 800-989-8255. If you'd like to join the discussion online, you can go to our website at www.npr.org. Click on the Your Turn section, then scroll down to Talk of the Nation. At 40 minutes past the hour, it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. With an 8-stroke victory at the British Open, Tiger Woods yesterday became the youngest player to win 4 major championships and complete a career Grand Slam. Today we're talking about that achievement and what's ahead for Tiger Woods. My guest is John Feinstein, commentator on NPR's Morning Edition. He's the author of many books, most recently The Majors, and he's currently at work on a book about college basketball. It will be out this fall. If you want to join the conversation, our number here is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Let's go to Kathleen in Washington. Kathleen, you're on Talk of the Nation.
Hi, Juan.
Hi.
I have this wonderful thing I want to say. Hi, John. But I know won't say hi, Bob, back.
Anyway. If you want me to, Kathleen, I will.
Oh, no, that's good. Okay. Let me say this to you both. I'm an anthropologist, and I think one of the things, I want to change the discussion just for a minute. One of the things I think is important, I deal in race relations, and I always usually have a lot to do with white guys who are trying to get it. And I mean people who have looked at the demographics, looked at this country, and recognized that when they look at new businesses, when they look at the population, that many of them are going to have to change in their hearts. So I'm not so much interested in what Tiger has to say about what he's going to do, as much as I think he has already helped in terms of symbolism for what I call looking at reverse race relations. In essence, I'm hoping that elite white men in this country who have looked at golf as being their game and being an exclusive elite game will look at not only Tiger Woods, who has, you know, blown everyone out of the water, but that many of these men will also be moved to realize that if they mentor young black men and see them as not objects like certain athletes, but as American resources in business and capitalism and social services, et cetera, and mentor them and use their power and resources to bring a lot of these young black men along in their world, that we will, as a country, move a little bit more toward better race relations and to stop young black men being viewed as threatened, as threats and as demons.
All right. Well, Kathleen, thanks for your call. In fact, we have an email here from Jenny Mack in Iowa City who says that when she was watching the golf tournament on Sunday, there were some comments made by the announcers that there is a great deal of etiquette required to play the game of golf. Tiger, they said, for a young man, has acquired a great deal of etiquette in the game. I have to say that the subtext of these comments shouted out to me, oh, you think he has a great deal of etiquette for a black man. He knows his place. They also said, it's as if Tiger knows he belongs here. Well, why wouldn't he think so? How much of what the commentators say about Tiger is really laced with racial notions, in your opinion, John?
Well, I think that the references to etiquette, which I did hear that. I didn't hear the thing about Tiger feeling as if he belongs here. But again, I'm going to guess at the second one. The second one, I think the point they're making is that St. Andrews has been around since the 17th century. I always get my century screwed up. And that Tiger acts as if he was there when the game was invented, because he's so comfortable doing what he does and being at St. Andrews, and he has such a great sense of the history of the game, which is one of the things that makes him different from many young athletes. You know, in today's world, most young athletes think that their sport began with them. Tiger is very aware of the history of the game and, you know, made a point of talking to Gene Sarazen when he had the opportunity to before Sarazen died last year, and has spent considerable time with Jack Nicklaus and with Arnold Palmer and with Tom Watson. And I think that that sets him apart from a lot of young athletes. As far as the etiquette is concerned, I did hear that comment. And I think the point that was being made there was that Tiger, for someone so young, already has an understanding of the etiquette of the game. Whereas, again, going back to many young athletes, you know, you hear players in the NBA, you always hear Charles Barkley for the last couple of years lecturing Allen Iverson on having respect for the game and respect for those who've come before him. That's never been an issue with Tiger. In fact, just the opposite. I really don't believe, I think one of the things that Tiger has done that Michael Jordan also did was that he's gone beyond being a great black golfer. Michael Jordan went beyond being a great black basketball player. They both have become so familiar to white America, black America, any faction of this country, that they transcend the issue of race. Nobody talks anymore about Tiger being the first African American or Cablin Asian, however you want to refer to him, to do this. He's just the first golfer
right.
to do these things,
and
that's,
I think that's
the best part of it.
It's a tremendous
accomplishment.
Yeah, but the question is, I was going to ask you, what about other golfers? I remember when, think it was Fuzzy Zeller who made the joke about collard greens and fried chicken at the U.S. Open. Has that kind of thing died away?
Yeah, it really has. I'm not saying it's dead, and I'm not saying there aren't racists in the locker room, just as there are racists in every walk of life. But I think that because of who Tiger has become, both as a golfer and as a person, because when he first came on the tour, he wasn't at all comfortable with his fellow pros and vice versa. And that had more to do with his stardom and his attitude and the money he was making than anything racial. He came in with kind of a chip on his shoulder. He was a little nervous, understandably, about the spotlight that was on him. He used to bring his security guards into the locker room with him until the tour told him he couldn't do that anymore. And that made the other players feel uncomfortable. Like, who is this guy, 21 years old, traipsing into the locker room here with security people? But that has died away. He's much more comfortable with them. He feels much more a part of the tour now. And they're much more comfortable with him. They find him much more approachable, more comfortable. He went on a golfing vacation to Ireland last week, as he's done the last couple of years with Mark O'Meara and with David Duval and with Jesper Parnevik and a couple of other players. So he's much more a part of the fabric of the tour now, as is understandable in his fourth year out, than he was in his first year out.
Let's go to Kurt in Kent, Washington. Kurt, you're on Talk of the Nation.
Good morning, or good afternoon.
Well,
you.
Good morning to you, Kurt.
Don't you suppose that all the people at Nike are just red all over this morning from pinching themselves because they can't believe that they found an icon to replace Michael Jordan?
Well, they went out looking for him, to be fair, Kurt. You know, Phil Knight, when Tiger Woods played his last amateur event, the U.S. Amateur in 1996, which just happened to be outside of Portland at Pumpkin Ridge, which is Nike's headquarters, Phil Knight was out walking the golf course every day because he knew this was the guy. And not that that took a great genius. I mean, everybody knew Tiger was the next one in terms of marketing in golf. And so they were actively searching for the next Michael Jordan, and they got a little bit lucky that he's been so extraordinary so quickly.
Okay, that was just a prelim, actually. My main question is, well, actually, I'm glad that you're treating the race thing as far as his mixed race so much, because I hear so many more times about his African heritage than I do about his Asian heritage. And, you know, to borrow the old patronizing cliche, Tiger isn't a credit to his race. Tiger is a credit to Tiger. And I think there's a lot of people who, on the basis of a thin genetic connection, are trying to appropriate him and get a piece of him and act like he owes him something. And, you know, maybe Tiger is saying that it's time, about time, that we realize that race isn't all that important, and he doesn't want to play that game. And I'm wondering if he can do us more good by actually transcending the whole thing.
Well, Kurt, let me ask you, do you think it would scare white America if Tiger Woods sort of said, you know, I have an aggressive agenda that in specific speaks to the African-American community? I want to help African-Americans who've been disadvantaged over the centuries.
Oh, it would depend how he expressed it, I suppose. I wouldn't be particularly scared by it, but on the other hand, you know, I don't overrate the advice value of celebrities in general, too. So many times we run to celebrities to hear what they have to say about things, and, you know, the fact is, hey, they're just celebrities. They're not
They become instant experts. I think that's a good point, Kurt. But one thing, Juan, that Kurt touched on the issue of Tiger not wanting to make race a big issue. And, you know, let me just say this. Tiger understands that race is an issue in this country. I mean, we can sit here and pretend it's not. Right. We all know it is. And he said something to me once that I thought was very instructive. I was asking him about winning the Masters and the whole question of how he dealt with that. And he said to me, I didn't want to make it that big a deal. And I said, for crying out loud, you won the Masters, you're 21 years old, your first professional tournament, you were the first minority, however you describe yourself, you were the first minority to win down there at what was once Lily White Augusta National. Wouldn't you want to make a bigger deal of it? And he said, because I didn't want to make the club that big a deal. The club is in Augusta National. Huh. And there's no question the people there have gone out of their way to try and make Tiger feel welcome, to feel a part of the club because he's a member, having won the tournament and all that. But he's still very aware of what they stood for. He's aware of what Lee Elder went through to get to play there in 1975. He's extremely conscious of all these things. He may not be that outspoken on it now, but he's very aware of it.
Let's go to Andrew in Boston. Andrew, you're on Talk of the Nation.
Hi, Juan and John. I think that Tiger represents very much the best of what America has to offer at the beginning of the 21st century. And that may very well be his place in terms of world history hundreds of years down the road. A country where a child of mixed race heritage can excel in where his talent is, can go to one of the nation's finest universities, and can move on and be recognized by the whole nation and be looked to lead socially and politically because of skills outside of those realms.
All right. Thanks for your call, Andrew. We have a similar call here from Pamela in Sacramento. Pamela, you're on Talk of the Nation.
Hi, Juan.
Hi, Pamela, before you begin, let me tell everyone who's tuned into this conversation about Tiger Woods that they're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Yes, my comment is similar to the last caller's, and it also addresses the question of what Tiger can do socially or politically. I think he's already done a great deal by challenging people's perceptions about race, because he says he comes from a mixed heritage, and for other mixed people like myself, he holds a great hope in making people realize that you can no longer categorize people into either black or white. So I think he really represents the new ethnic mix in America.
But does it have any agenda attached to it, or is it simply that he exists as someone who says we shouldn't discriminate?
Well, I think the importance is that people are used to being able to categorize people. He may not have that agenda wanting people to realize what he thinks about himself in terms of his race. But I think that inherently people have to question his ethnic heritage and realize that he's not African-American, he's not Asian, but he's a mixture of things.
All right. Thanks for your call, Pamela.
Thank you.
John, I wanted to finish up with you by asking about how you would compare Tiger Woods to some of the football players, the basketball players that you know.
You're talking personally or in terms of his potential athletically, or
well,
both?
Both, in terms of his personal and political agendas and his awareness, political consciousness, but then secondly, as a human being.
Well, let me say this first. I have begun to think that Tiger Woods has a chance athletically to not only be the greatest golfer that ever lived, but perhaps the greatest athlete of his time. And that takes in a lot. That takes in Michael Jordan. That takes in Henry Aaron. That takes in Babe Ruth. I mean, anybody you care to name, Jack Nicklaus, Pete Sampras, just go down the list of great athletes of the last 100 years. I think Tiger has a chance to not only take his place with them, but perhaps to even surpass them, which is a remarkable thing to even think, but that's how good he is athletically. As far as, again, his potential to politically and to be an agent for social change, the potential is unlimited, and it's simply a question of what he wants to do. It's all in his hands, because as I said to you at the top, I don't think I've ever met an athlete who's smarter than Tiger Woods.
And so
I think
you could see a president Tiger Woods.
Nothing is out of the realm of possibility. I mean, Bill Bradley wasn't that far away from it, and I think Tiger Woods has all those qualities and perhaps more. It's not out of the question, but I don't know, because I haven't seen evidence yet that it is or is not there that he has that inclination. Again, I go back to Michael Jordan, who he's very friendly with, and Michael Jordan has stayed away from that, at least to date.
All right, that's all the time we have for today. I'd like to thank all of you who called this hour, and especially my guest, John Feinstein, commentator on NPR's Morning Edition. John is the author of many books. His most recent is The Majors, and he's currently working on a new book about college basketball that will be out this fall. He joined us from World Cottage Productions in Bridgehampton, New York. Thanks for joining us, John.
My pleasure, Juan.
In Washington, I'm Juan Williams, NPR News.